M6, number 3B.
Then we must reason further in order not to fall into the traps of the old deductive reasoning of the materialist, namely, that if being has infinite ideas or aspects or variations, every idea of these infinite ideas must be seen as an idea of the whole and no more as a part. See, there we go another way than the natural scientists, that each idea of the infinite ideas are ideas of the whole, and are never a part. You can reason further and can see, therefore, that an idea, every one idea of the infinite idea, would not be an idea without the whole. That an idea is only then an idea if it is an idea of the whole. What does that mean? It means that every idea of the whole reflects every other idea of the whole. Which brings us to that which we will see later on in one of the chapters in the textbook, stating that an idea is actually only then an idea when it reflects every other idea. That's what we call the blendings of idea. An idea like intelligence per se, isn't an idea of God. It is only then an idea of God when I see it as reflecting spirit, when I see it that intelligence is a spiritual intelligence and not a material intelligence. That this intelligence must reflect soul, that it is only then intelligence when that intelligence is spiritual and a soul unchangeable. That intelligence is not something that comes and goes. It must reflect principle, and I must see that that intelligence, which in spirit is spiritual and in soul unchangeable, is self-operative, and I have principle. An intelligence that is not self-operative is not the idea intelligence. It must reflect principle. It must reflect life. I must see that that idea which is spiritual, unchangeable, which is self-operative, is of the nature of life, must be eternal, indestructible, or it isn't intelligence. And I must see it as truth, that it is conscious of itself, or it isn't intelligence. If it's all intelligence, I am conscious of intelligence, it isn't intelligence as an idea. It would still be a human sense of intelligence. And it must, as love, be an intelligence that fulfills a plan, and it's not just running into a dead end. Only an intelligence that fulfills a big plan is intelligence. And you know how much intelligence is used up nowadays just for nothing, to run into a dead end. So can you see that our consciousness of oneness is quite different from the usual old classical analytical concept. Our so-called parts are never a part of the whole. They are always an aspect of the whole, but always the whole. And therefore, like this idea, intelligence would reflect all other ideas. You can take them all by the hundreds. They must reflect all those ideas, or intelligence is just not an idea of God, and therefore not an idea of the whole. And in this way we begin to learn or to culture within ourselves a completely different attitude. Just as I have said, an idea without the whole is not an idea, in the same way we begin to see in the oneness of being that the whole, without an infinite idea, is not the whole either. Principle is not principle. Principle and idea is one. Principle without idea is not the principle. It needs the idea. But the idea is not not a part of the whole. And so the whole is never whole without its parts, without its aspects, without its ideas. So we can see that really every idea, whatever that idea is, represents always the whole. Always the whole. And is not a part. I think if we have seen through that, we really have gotten somewhere. We really have touched something big. And all what we are going to try to do this week is to see that the whole can never be divided up in parts, that the whole is always whole, and every aspect is an aspect of the whole, and only then we keep the pedal note of oneness. For instance, take a biblical example first of this concept, where somebody asked Jesus, "Show us the Father." Well, the Father stood for God or for principle. "Show us the Father." And Jesus' answer was, "He that seeth me seeth the Father." If you see the idea, if you see the aspect, you see the whole. If you see the idea, you see the principle, because principle and idea cannot be separated. So if you see the so-called, in quotation mark, part, if you see me, you see not the part, you see the whole. You can never see a part. You can always only see the whole. Yeah? That's terrific in the spiritual. Can you see how, perhaps if you analyze your own mentality, if you analyze it, you may now see how much in Christian Science we were still thinking of dividing up God into parts, and having a part of God, and having little tiny ideas of the whole. As there is no such a thing as dividing up spirit. So if Jesus said, "If you see me, you see the Father," you can now translate that into the metaphysical language of Mrs. Eddy and see, if you see an idea, you see the whole, you see God. If you see an idea, you don't see a part of God, you see the whole of God. And then you can evolve that, elaborate that, and see, oh yes, then the power of an idea is the power of the Infinite One. The power of an idea is not a little part of God, because it's the idea. It's still the power of the Infinite One. If we see the substance of an idea, we don't see just a little bit, a tiny quantity of the whole. If we see the substance of an idea, we see the substance of the Infinite One, of the whole. If we see the identity of an idea, we just don't see the identity of a tiny little something. We see the identity of the Infinite One. And if we see the government of an idea, we see the government of the Infinite One. We always see the One, the Infinite One. And if we see the individuality of an idea, whatever that individuality may be, it's still the individuality of the Infinite One, and not just a part of it. And so if we see the dominion of an idea, we see the dominion of the Infinite One. If you see me, you see the Father. And if we see an idea, or if we see the plane of an idea, we always see the plane of the Infinite One. Do you know what that means? You reason it out. If you see the plane of an idea, if you see the plane of our individual mission, we see not us, not my, our mission. We see God's own mission. We see the plane of God Himself. If you see me, you see the Father. You always see the whole. And so we must be careful not to limit our concept. Yeah? I think when Moses saw that, perhaps in spiritual history he was perhaps the first one to see that, that up to Moses they just could see the God of Abraham. That was a limited concept. It was the God of dear old Abraham. And the God of Jacob was just the God of Jacob. But when Moses came along, he could see, no, there must be something bigger about it. We can't have that everybody has his own God. And so he said, actually, we must not have the God of somebody, but the God of God. That would be the one God. And so he called that God, I am. What? I am not of Abraham and not of Jacob. I am that I am. I am that I am. He could see that there is just one indivisible God, the I amness of being, so that there is nothing ever going on except God being conscious of itself as beingness. There is nothing outside. There is nothing divided up. The I am is always the whole I am. I am that I am. So it is affirming the I amness of being. And that is, I think, what Jesus then tried to show even more clearly, to show, yes, Moses defined God as I am, that I am, there is no other I amness. But in his time, in Jesus' time, he had to see, if you see me, you see the I am. If you see my I amness, you see actually the I amness of God. And therefore he could always state everything as I am. And so he could say, I am the light of the world. It was no more like in the Old Testament, God said, let there be light, and God was the light. Jesus could see, that light is my I amness. I am the light, no more God. Meaning, if you see me, you see God anyway. So if I say, I am the light, or if I say, God is the light, it's the same statement. Because principle and idea is one. There are not two different statements. But he brought it home to see that we have to acquaint our consciousness to the point where we don't think anymore we are a consciousness of our own, a beingness of our own, an I amness of our own, and then above us somewhere is the I am of deity, But that you could see, if you see me, if you see my I amness, you see the I amness of God. I am that I am. So I am the light of the world. I am the resurrection. I am the life. I am the way and the truth and the life. I am the truth. I am the life. If you see me, you see God. If you see me, you see life. You see life with capital L. You see truth, capital T, truth. You can't see anything if you see me, except you see me, you see the Father. Can you see the terrific bigness of it? Therefore he could say before Abraham was, I am. I am. The I amness of being is my I amness. I am that I am. So we don't have to think that Jesus was saying, well, Jesus was so old that he already lived before Abraham. He just wanted to show that the I amness of being is my I amness, and that is from eternity to eternity. And Mrs. Eddy gave those well-known watches at the time. She gave the following one, which I've taken out of, I think it was in Collectania, where she says, take time each day and say, what is the most powerful thing in the world? Answer, it is God saying, I am in His own creation. I am, not as a God, I am in God's creation. I am the I amness of the creation. He goes on with this I am and says, any event is every event. You see, the whole universe, everything that happens is what? Any event is every event, and I am the law of it. I am is the law of every event. I am is the law of every event. It's not only God that says, I am. He is the I am in his own creation, in every event. That's his I amness. So she goes on and says, I am because thou art, in bracket, mind is, dash, I am. Actually, one should see it written out so that you can see what she says. I am because mind is, I am. I am what? Thou art what mind is. I am. So I am what thou art. I am where thou art, where mind is. I am. I am one with thee, with mind. O thou infinite, I am. So she elaborated this, you see, she said, there is an I am, that I am is the I am in every situation, in every circumstance, in every event, in any event, the I am is. It is the I am because God is, the I am is, it is what there is the I am, it is the where there is, where is it in the I am, takes away, you see, space and time, and I am one with thee, because there is only one infinite I am. That's how she tried to point it out, just always to pinpoint that we should not separate I am from I am. Not separate the I am from I am. There is only one I am that I am. That I am is in every situation, in every event, everywhere, at every time, in every circumstances, in any way and shape and form. It's just the I am. Yes, so in this way we really come nearer and nearer to the signs of the oneness and depicting really that science is oneness, but that it is a very differentiated oneness, because that I am has infinite ideas. Which means now that from the Christian Science point of view, that fundamental question that has been asked by the Greek, is there a contradiction between the one and the many, is solved. The one is the one of all the many. And the many are no more parts of the one. They are always the one itself, just different aspects of it. That one is always principle looking at itself, principle interpreting itself as the one principle, and the many are always the new ways that principle is looking at principle. And this is the fact about the mystical approach. You know, what means mysticism? You know, mysticism is based on that Unio Mystica, and which is defined like this. The Unio Mystica is the attempt to comprehend the divine through, this is the point, through absorption of one's own consciousness in God, so as to become one with God. Can you see the difference now between science and mysticism? Over a long stretch of that definition, we can go along with it. We can say it's an attempt to comprehend the divine, so that one's own consciousness in God is becomes one with God. But the critical term is that mysticism is an absorption of one's own consciousness in God. The moment it becomes an absorption in God, it loses its differentiation. It loses its individuality, and it becomes one amorphous whole. So that mysticism is always dealing with an amorphous whole. Well, therefore it has only the whole and does not want to have the many. Whereas science wants to have the many and yet have only the whole. Science wants to have the many, but the many not as isolated parts. The many are always the whole, but not absorbed, but reflected. That's why the term reflection makes the whole difference in Mrs. Eddy's teaching. That the infinite one remains one, but is reflected infinitely in infinitely diversified, individualized reflections, but that reflection is not a part of the whole, but a reflection of the whole always. It remains the whole. And in here really is the great point which distinguishes mysticism from Christian Science. I'd like to point that out, that difference between mysticism and Christian Science, because I always see right through the history of Christian Science But those who are eagerly and very devotedly interested in the subject of Christian Science, if they come to a point where their concept of science can no more enlarge themselves, they usually all fall always back to mysticism. It's a very interesting phenomenon. That the moment the student cannot enlarge the concept of science and comes somehow, touches a platform where he can no more go on top of that platform, pierce through that apparent borderline, that his frustration seeks somehow an answer and he falls back into mysticism. And that has happened over and over and over. And so we have to be very careful about our methods and where we are going, that we really pierce through. And I feel what we have been doing last year with the 5 hour of the logic of Christian Science is one of the main keys that we are not falling back into mysticism, but that we can have a oneness with variety, a oneness with infinitude of aspects without losing the oneness, without losing the structural sense of that oneness. Yes. That is point 7.